Now, I invite you to ask questions and to make comments to the panelists, either in toto or you may address concerns to particular people. As moderator, I will always give priority to first-time speakers at the microphones. I'd like to point out at the present time that we have two microphones, and we ask you to come to those to speak. One is in this aisle, and one is in this aisle.
Two questions. One, has there been any reaction by special interest groups that deal with those who are disabled on this project? And this could be to anybody on the panel. And the second one, what are the positive things that could be done with the information gleaned from this project? So the first one deals with disability groups. How are they reacting to this? Are they saying this is not good, or is it good? And then what can we positively do with this information that seems will be coming about?
Brockman, please.
I would just notice that there have been quite a number of advocates for the handicapped who are very troubled about the sort of contradiction that quickly seems to appear, that we, on the one hand, want to be so committed to those who in one way or another are disabled, and yet the way we solve the problem, if we find it early enough, that is in the womb, would be to eliminate people. That there's a very puzzling difficulty, though there have been a couple cases on the other side. There was a very strange My Turn article in Newsweek early this year, in February, I think it was, where an advocate for the handicapped more or less moved very quickly from euthanizing her pet to euthanizing people at the end of life to, here's this 40-year-old guy who's kind of troublesome in our society, isn't taking good care of him, so maybe eliminate him. Maybe others want to talk about that, or the second half of your question had to do with what good is going to be coming out. I'll just mention one thing. There is a case, the first case of actual genetic therapy. Dr. Mortensen rightly points out that the tests come much more quickly, and we figure out things are wrong, but we don't have any therapies. The goal for many of the researchers is to find the therapy. I mentioned Francis Collins with the cystic fibrosis gene. They hoped to get beyond just being able to test more quickly than they've been able to, but they are working hard at it. There was one protocol approved out in Virginia with French Anderson's research team where they believe they have successfully inserted a correction to a gene that created the bubble boy kind of problem. This was in the case of a little girl, the child that had to live in such a sanitized environment because their whole immune system was not functioning. And they think that this little girl has been given pretty much clean bill of health. This was reported last March at a conference.
Let me just make one sentence and then Bob Hirsch will give the answer. But if you pay attention to medicine over many years, you may notice that we cure some East African rhinoceros tick disease quite well. But the disease that everybody's dying of, we rarely find the answer to. So in answer to what he said, is there some cures? Yes, but they're all in the areas of very obscure things.
More people are researching this disease than people have the disease.
Right. So you get carried into the, you know, usual propaganda idea that they're doing so much good, and you're completely missing the point that they're talking about something that is very rare, while the real big problems where there are lots and lots of people with something, they rarely ever find an answer to that. So hence, are they doing much that's successful? The answer certainly is no. That doesn't mean they're not trying, so don't get the wrong impression. But what I tried to get across is this temptation by the public and by the insurance companies, etc., to say, well, we know this person has so-and-so, now why don't we do something to eliminate it?
How many of you saw an article that appeared nationally in your newspapers about a month ago? And if I say this incorrectly, somebody please just get up and correct. I think I remember it well enough to say that it was one of the first cases of the in-house, that is, in a laboratory development of DNA genes that have been inserted to take care of skin cancers. I see some heads shaking here. And apparently, they ate up not the cancer genes, but got rid of those genes that weren't doing their job, and now have caused the cancer tumors to recede. And that may not be the complete answer, but it sure looks like it's headed in the right direction. And they had pictures of the stuff done in the paper that I saw. I thought to bring it along, and I didn't. But somebody can put more definition to it. Please don't hesitate.
Next question, please.
Yeah, my comment is for directed toward Dr. Mortensen. Just as a point of clarification, when the time comes that medicine will be able to do a genetic workup on an individual, and in this genetic workup they find defective genes, is it not so that that does not necessarily mean that that person is going to have demonstrated condition for that defective gene, but that is actually a process determined through protein synthesis and other things, that the genotype is different than the karyotype, the observable condition, and that getting the genotype of a human is simply the first step. It does not tell us what kind of life they're going to be living.
You're absolutely right. He makes a very important point not to miss. In almost all inherited disease, just speaking of inherited disease, the disease ranges from almost no symptoms ever to terrible disability. But a la 1992, it's virtually impossible to be sure which category you fit into. So therefore, let's suppose you're an abortionist, you would get an abortion for someone who potentially would be perfectly normal. A good example of this, just to dramatize how far medicine can go off the beam, and I hope you would, I can tell almost that you are quite optimistic about what medical articles say. I would like to convert you to being pessimistic about them. A good example was German measles, where, as you all well know, that if a mother gets German measles while they're in the first trimester of pregnancy, there's no question a horror will result. Isn't that true? Everybody's saying yes. So this fellow in Detroit studied 1,000 cases. How many of the children were deformed? None. Did you hear what I said? None. N-O-N-E. It's interesting, that article was never put forth in the newspapers that I ever noticed. It was put in all the medical journals, but the point he's making it very well. They get carried to extremes, and then you're going to end up aborting a lot of people who are not even really sick at all. That's very true what you just said.
Just two comments on a little further along on this same topic. One is, I don't know how we're going to be able to stop the research. I don't think that's going to be a strategy worth pursuing. What we need to do is make ourselves very much aware of where the research is going and try to work at the ways in which we can join hands with a variety of maybe sometimes unlikely partners in protecting human life and trying to see these applications put to good use. I might also mention that there is a lot of interest in the interaction between environment and a given genetic predisposition, and the question was asked, what good may come? They think they may be able to advise people that you are particularly at risk for a certain kind of problem with certain kind of carcinogens, so you should more carefully than the general public avoid this, that, or the other, and they hope that they may be able in that way just to give people advice about how they might preserve their health better as they live.
Follow up. And so we have a two-part challenge here. One is to determine the entire human genome, and that probably is the lesser of the two challenges. The second challenge is to find out what will be expressed in a person after looking at their genotypic workup. And that's the greater of the two because...
That's something we can't do now.
Right. And so the thought to me of determining euthanasia after only the first part of the challenge is really working with too little information. Thank you.
Thank you. We move to the next mic, please.
In response to a previous gentleman who asked about people with disabilities, I could call his attention to a statement made and printed in the Issues of Law and Medicine sometime in the last 2 years. This is a statement that was in response to some of the points that Dr. Bachman was making relative to the first article by a group in Australia. And it was a well-reasoned and rather pungent piece of writing in their behalf. A comment about Dr. Bachman's presentation. I think it was marvelously helpful, especially in the pastoral care of people. I would like to go back to the first article and say we've got to be careful that people don't take a reductionist attitude toward the first article and think only in terms of gifts. You have to take into account the very first statements. I believe that God has made me. And that's the part that's left out. Then to Dr. Hirsch, what can we do that the beneficial results of medicine do not carry dollar signs with them? I think that that's what destroys or is a destructive force in society. It's got to be for the common good. An illustration of that is the principle that has existed for a long time, that blood that is given up by transfusion is donated blood. You don't go around buying that. And I think that if you put these results of medical investigation on that plane, we stand some chance of speeding the amount of good that can be distributed in the human population.
Okay, first.
Let me say that, first of all, I don't know that that's even possible any longer. We have progressed so far down the line in the, first of all, in the patenting of these findings, and because of the patenting, the companies are putting more money into the effort. Not all research is in the government hands under the project. Quite a little of it is done like a kind of a subcontractor by private companies. And that's a meritorious thought. I'm sorry, I don't know what the answer to it is. It's been forever a problem, will continue forever to be a problem. It's like saying, why couldn't we get all these doctors and lawyers to give their services free? Or if not that, let the government pay for them. Well, you know, you got to be able to generate the income and the taxes for that kind of an approach to things. And I just don't know that it's possible to do it on this project or any others, given the history of this country and the way we do things.
Just a brief comment on the first article business. I would agree that there are lots of folks out there who don't get the I believe in God part of it, and that needs to be argued with them. I think there are a number of folks out there who think they get that part, but not knowing that that is the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, they find ways to rationalize things which we might not rationalize, indeed would not rationalize, if we understand that who we are is a matter of what Christ has done for us, not a matter of how we measure up on some scale.
Next question or comment, please.
Just a question about perhaps a general perception of the attitude or mindset of the research scientists, now even the complexity of the genetic scientists. Our impression of time past was that the research scientists simply thought the job that person had was to search and find. The implications of that and where that led to was up to the ethicists or, you know, some other community. Is that changing? Is, you know, with the complications that are presented today, the implications is more, and I guess I'm looking for a word of hope. Are those who are involved in the research, you also have an approach of concern of the implications that might be connected with that, or is it not?
Well, to depress you more than you were depressed, the entire thrust and objective, and I'll even go further, I'm pretty sure it's in there, whatever you call it, proposal of Congress, why are we doing this? I think it's interesting to note that it is not to cure disease, it is not to help mankind, it is not to do anything of that nature. It specifically states we have one job, to isolate the entire human genome. The consequences thereof are not our business. That is specifically stated in the proposal. The second thing which Mr. Hirsch has been speaking about, I hope you're not missing, the whole human genome project now, at least in my opinion, I might say also the opinion of the New York Times, who follows it every week, is that the main thrust now is money. It is not to cure disease, it's not to do anything else you're thinking about. It has now become so profitable that it's become like a gold rush, and that's the exact words they use. Now, is there anybody thinking about human beings? The reason I'm here today is only one, because I haven't got time for this, is to get you all to realize that if the church, and fortunately now we have a chair at St. Louis here in this seminary, and we have this good man Bachman here, doesn't in some way get involved and start thinking about these things, I think it will be all over. That's my own opinion.
I might just add to that, that we do have an unprecedented opportunity in terms of the research by virtue of the fact that they've set aside, really, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 4% of whatever gets allocated year by year to do these religious, social, ethical implications. And the government is putting money in places where some people complain because it sounds like violating separation of church and state and all, to bring together people from a variety of faith traditions as well as ethicists to try to put some markers on the way to more sane use. But I think it is true there are a number of researchers who are driven simply by the basic desire to know. And there are some who would argue that that's, in part at least, God-given. But, of course, more than just desiring to know needs to be there.
Thank you. Please.
I hesitate to admit this in this crowd today, that I'm a molecular biology graduate student. And another word for molecular biology is genetics. So I guess I would hope to answer whoever was here a minute ago's question, that there are people in the field that are concerned about what is going on and that the research is not just a quest for knowledge and without morals. I think I have lots of comments I want to make, so I'm going to restrain myself. I think you've certainly addressed some of the key dangers, the one of abortion being used to eliminate any unwanted individuals, and clearly stated that diagnosis is always way ahead of therapeutics. And that there are big dangers of invasions of privacy. And I think Dr. Morton's encouragement for us to be skeptical and pessimistic about what medical research can do is probably a good one, and particularly when it gets reported in the newspapers, it tends to not match what I read in the journal article. But I would say that I would call him very optimistic in saying that within 5 years there will be a genetic blueprint for each individual. I would like to say a few things that I think are optimistic about the Human Genome Project, and not as speaking as one wholeheartedly behind it. First of all, I would say I think we make ourselves God anytime we vaccinate an infant for measles, that we have intervened in the natural course of disease. Recombinant genetics have brought us recombinant insulin, so that insulin for diabetic patients no longer has to be derived from cows or pigs. But can be made in bacteria and then purified and be the human form of insulin. The gene therapy for immunological diseases that Dr. Bachman mentioned, even though it is a rare disease, is now in testing. I think cystic fibrosis is certainly a disease that we've been able to screen for a long time, and probably many unwanted children have been aborted that have had cystic fibrosis, but also people have used that screening to make a decision not to have children. based on the fact that they are a carrier of cystic fibrosis. Now that we have cloned the gene for cystic fibrosis, researchers have developed a mouse that does not carry the cystic fibrosis gene and now have a mouse model of that disease so they can further study it, which will hopefully eventually lead to therapeutics. So my question to everyone up there is, do we proceed with the Human Genome Project? And that's presuming we have some control over whether we proceed. And if we proceed, is that carefully or not at all?
Who wants to begin?
I appreciate her comments because I've been working in this area for 3 years with a number of folks who are doing the research on the scientific and medical side. And I'm not quite sure how maybe Dr. Mortensen is right, one could too easily make your bed where you shouldn't, but I have found a lot of people who genuinely care about improving the human lot who are involved in this research and who are trying to think through what are the appropriate ways. And I do believe a lot of good is coming out of a number of the conferences that are being carried on, so I'm glad that you have reminded us of that other part.
Well, every word you said I agreed with, so I can't argue. The only thing I obviously there are people who are trying to do a decent job and improve the quality of life. There's no argument about that. That is not the problem. What I am trying to get across is that abortion wasn't a problem either, and look what happened. Euthanasia was not a problem, and look what happened. Now, this Human Genome Project, in my opinion, is far more loaded than abortion and euthanasia. We have an answer to all problems here if we let it get away from us. And I think the church, especially, has got to enter this discussion, namely people like Reverend Bachman, and this hopefully this group here will get involved and interested. But I think it's very optimistic to think that the average genetic scientist is doing this because he has a good heart.
Genome Project?
I missed what you said.
My final question after my ramblings was, would you choose not to proceed with the Human Genome Project?
Well, that's an extremely excellent question because we have no choice. It's being done all over the world. So if the United States stops tomorrow, it won't make the slightest difference. I think everyone should understand that point. This is a race for gold. Maybe you don't like me to say that, but that's what it is. So they're not going to let us get away with it. They're going to pursue it too.
Yeah, they're patenting their own finds. What happens? They're patenting who? They're patenting their own finds, and if we were to pull out of the project, given the debt we've got right now, I don't see us shopping for any of that information very expeditiously. When you were talking about testing a moment ago, or Doc was, I knew in one of these documents I had, there was an example about the cost constraints of the societal priorities in the testing, and this guy Collins, who's very much involved in the project, does not address the question of who will be screened and who's going to pay for it. They estimate costs as high as $33,000 for a single test. If you tested that many people at that rate, or tested 5 million people at that rate, you'd be spending $165 billion for testing alone. And they estimate the total bill, given the population, probably is in the magnitude of $8 trillion.
Okay, the next question, please, or concern?
I like what Dr. Bachman said about the fact that oftentimes the church is preaching a different message than what people are wanting to hear or where they're at. Particularly, you mentioned, like we emphasize a lot, thou shalt not kill, and people are rationalizing in their own minds how to get around it so that what they're doing is not killing. And I think that's a major concern that we need to address, because that that is a concern, like with abortion or with euthanasia, and that particularly like with babies, that people would look at a defective baby and say that that's not a human. And that, and like was mentioned this morning with the fertilizing of 100 eggs and so on like that, that people would look at that and say that's not a human being. So that's not a problem. And I think in some way we in the church need to address that basic question of when life begins, and are we going to treat that fertilized egg in the same way as we would treat a baby that's farther along in development. And I don't think that we have been addressing that concern like we should, and we're giving people an escape out because they are coming around and saying that, yeah, we're not killing, and that we, it's later on it might be that, but it's not that right at this point. So.
Next question, please.
I think that I need to say, I tried to say this morning, but it still fits, that we as a church particularly need to be involved in the forefront of the public policy and decision-making related to some of this. Those of us who are not, who are lay people but are involved in healthcare decisions, when I hear you talking about abortion and euthanasia, we don't have to go that far. I don't have any trouble staying in those lines. I have trouble with the lines that deal with macro allocation and micro allocation. You know, when we are trying to decide who pays the bill, it's okay to say, well, we need to deal with the individual versus the group. But when I, as a community health nurse, know that one baby for $240,000 worth of care may die anyway, we could support the whole public health clinic in the county of St. Louis for that amount of money and perhaps improve life for 2,000 children. So I think we need to be, as a church, providing some guidelines. I'm glad that we're here discussing it, because that's one of the biggest things that I'm wrestling with in the church, is how far do I go before I fall away from beliefs? Thank you.
Good question.
Yeah, some say there really are no other problems we should be talking about other than the allocation problems. Just one thing relating to the genome research. There are some folks who are seriously arguing that the results from the genome research are going to be such as to shatter our current way of providing health in this country, and that may end up being good if we have so many things going wrong with it. Fortunately, I'm not here to address that. I'm only reporting that to you. But there are some who claim that there's going to be such a revolution in what happens in the way medicine is practiced and the way it's paid for, and the way insurance works in particular, because insurance is based on pooled uncertainties. And the more you have this information, the less you have the uncertainty. And that's an interesting thing to consider, that may help with some of the problems that she raised.
I'm so happy you made the statement you made, because it never occurs in a church group, so you are the first I've ever heard say that. But it does bother me as a physician, and I've been in practice forever, as you can see. It bothers me a great deal, that $240,000 that she mentioned. And all of us in practice have to make these kind of decisions. But it is very offensive to me as a physician, and I hope I'm a Christian, that you have no problem spending $240,000 to save one child, but it doesn't bother you in the least that, let's say, one-third of our society has no medical insurance at all. It bothers me a very great deal. What I'm trying to get at is, this is not a simple question of genetically saving one child. It's a much bigger issue, because there are a lot of other people involved in that decision. And she pointed it out very well.
We have 2 minutes. Next, please.
One aspect of this debate is what goes on in the scientific community, but I think the other part of making decisions in regard to the human genome is the general public, and that part of the large problem with the Human Genome Project is that the general population is not educated in a way that provides them information to make decisions about genetics, so that most parents, when they are put in the position of, say, potentially doing amniocentesis, may not know what a gene is and are not in the position to make an educated decision about what's going on. And that part of the the difficulty here that I'd like to at least highlight is the growing gulf of knowledge between scientific professionals and the general population. And in regard to the church, then, I think that at least one area that the church can address that in is schooling in the parochial schools to at least look at what is being done in science education to see that at least those individuals who are within your educational system are getting an adequate education and background so that when they're put in the position of having to make decisions, they can make an informed decision.
Quick comment. My wife is a college English prof, was in practice in the college. No, not practice. What do you do? Teach. In any event, she went to work with me on this thing, and she sought out in four colleges in South Dakota. Now, this is out in the boonies. And in 2 weeks, she came up with 659 resource documents on the project. There's tons of information out there. Go to your local library. You'd be surprised.
Next, please.
A few concluding comments. I'm a graduate of this seminary. I'm a medical school prof at Washington University, and I've been an NIH investigator, and I've sat on the review panels of the NIH. I'm concerned that you bash molecular biology in a way and the genome project, not understanding that progress in medicine is going to come exactly this way. You're exactly right in asking issues about ethics. There are research scientists that share the concerns that Dr. Mortensen shares. I have my own problems with the project, but nonetheless, you should. It's almost like molecular biology itself, the study of that, is a sinful thing. I think it's a way of understanding God's creation in a special way. And I think, you know, I'm bringing to that a viewpoint of somebody who's gone to school here and, you know, and is also a Hebrew of Hebrews, so to speak, within science. And so that's just a concern. I think people may not understand molecular biology. And I think the tendency is to come from this conference thinking that all that's pretty evil.
I would like to second that, just in terms of our Lutheran theology. We tend not to locate the sin in the technology or the thing out there or whatever it is, but in the people who do what they do with it. And what is the most ground for concern is, as Dr. Mortensen said, the society and what they're willing to do on a variety of fronts, including possibly with this information.
I'm sure he gave this bash to me. I probably deserve it. But it is a lot better, being old-fashioned, to talk about this before it's too late, as we did with abortion. I was on the committees on abortion. I guess I'm the only survivor still sitting here in these early 60s. There wasn't a man in that committee, or woman, who believed that abortion would ever pass. It never entered our minds. We thought you'd be crazy that would pass. There was nobody on the euthanasia group who ever thought that would happen. Now, similarly with this, I guess my whole speech was bad. I didn't get it across. I am not questioning science. That's not the problem. I'm questioning the sin of man. There's no argument that scientists are doing things that obviously will save a lot of human lives, and we're all for that. And that's not the discussion we have here today. Our discussion is, are the scientists really going to be in charge of this? If they tell me they are, I'll say baloney. They're not going to be in charge. The public is. The public will decide what will be done with this information. And I think before catastrophe strikes, which may be 10 years from now, we ought to start thinking about all this. That is really what we're talking about.
Let's say thank you to all the panelists for their presentations this afternoon.